welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and physics and spirituality and a number of other related subjects. This is definitely a show that if you want to think a little bit more, it's a good show to be listening to tonight. And I wanted to also mention that we're going to continue with last week's show. We didn't really get even halfway through it, so we'll see how far we go tonight. And that's the physics and metaphysics of out-of-body travel. There's a lot more to explain, and I think that I will go ahead and begin tonight's show explaining a little more about the physics involved, because last week I scurried through them, even though it took a lot of time to do what I did do, and it'll help people who did not hear last week's show to kind of catch up. Plus, there's another little thing that I wanted to mention. You know, sometimes people use materials that other people have written, and they may or may not give credit for that. That's okay to some extent. I mean, the point is that if it's in something that I've written, my thought about it is, well, yeah, you should be giving credit, but mostly because not so much I need the credit as much as other people need to know the source to see if the people who are quote-unquote using what I've written without saying that they are saying it accurately. And that's part of the problem I experience. Sometimes it isn't the case. So people call themselves like a physicist, and they'll borrow something, I'll use that word kind of kindly, from like Life's Hidden Meaning or one of the other sources of my writing. I've written 350 articles. A lot of them are floating around out there. And so what happens is then I look at this, and they may have a much larger audience, actually, than I have. But there's one case in mind that I'm thinking about right now. This person claims tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are followers of his thought, and he's a physicist and this and that. And he directly borrowed a few things from stuff I've said, but he's done it from other sources, so, you know, even with a good crowd. Big problem is that a misunderstanding about physics is taking place. And I want to bring that into my discussion tonight so that those people who may have touched on other writings or read some of the things aren't getting confused, because this is really important, I think, to understand how God functions in our universe. I think it's a very important thing. So let's begin with that area of thought, and that is that some people, this other writer in particular, thinks that this universe that we're in, the one we call the universe, is the whole banana. And within this universe, there is this micro-universe that is all the other planes of consciousness. And they write this because of a specific element that they are somewhat aware of, and that is that when, as I said last week, when you leave your body, you tend to shrink. You can become very small before you go to any of the other dimensions of time and space. So one would think that the place you're going to is some super micro small place that happens to be somehow in our universe, but who knows? And there's a problem with that. And let me explain. In our universe, the physics of our universe applies. In our part of the universe, the dimension of time and space we exist in, what we think of when you see this map that the recent satellites have taken pictures of and shows something like looks like a cosmic egg-shaped thing, at least it's oval, but it appears to be in three-dimensionally more like an egg. And this looks like the known universe. The pictures they've done are remarkable. I think it's a terrific thing that science has done in the last decade in showing physical pictures of the universe. Great stuff. But here's the point. The physics of this universe is an accurate depiction. How do we know this? Well, because of a thing called quantum physics, which has shown to be infallible almost every time it's been challenged, actually every time it's been challenged. And it's done a remarkable job describing the physics of the present universe. There are a few things that it doesn't describe, but at least doesn't come up with wrong information. It just comes up with, like, non-information, like infinite numbers and weird stuff. I mean, it reaches a point of not being very accurate when you get down to things like the inside of black holes and how time-space it manages to expand itself beyond the speed of light and a lot of stuff like that, a thing called inflation. But in normal day occurrences, the physics of the universe seems to be constant. And one of the things that's really, really been strong, even before quantum physics, going back to Isaac Newton, Newtonian physics, has been gravity. And so we find that there is the effects of gravity seem to be universal every place except inside a black hole, which is pretty cool. I mean, you can go virtually any place in the universe, and you have something called the Standard Model, which can be used, and you end up with pretty accurate numbers about gravitational fields and masses and stuff like that. Well, if you assume, and this is a good assumption, but it isn't, you know, assumptions still can be challenged, that that's the true statement, then the universe as we understand it is controlled by gravity, and the curvature of the universe is controlled by gravity plus all the energy plus something else. But all of those things together, and something else, by the way, is the thought of our creator, but that's another issue for another time. So when you look at this, the curvature of the space that we have does not permit there to be the existence of another dimension within the time space of the universe. Now, you could say, well, what about a sub-universe and all this other stuff? Well, yeah, maybe. But here's the interesting part about that. The only way you really end up with more dimensionality is by reducing the effects of gravity and increasing the quantum constant, which is part of quantum physics. Then it all becomes apparent. And when you do that, you end up with enormously larger universes that surround this one, but aren't in this one, although they interpenetrate this one. There's a big difference between interpenetration and existence within, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. So here is the point. If you're trying to figure out, well, what happens to me when I astrally travel, if I can do that, I'm talking about yourself. You're trying to astrally travel. Well, this is the way it works. You can't astrally travel unless you move into your etheric body and then have your focus on something in a desire sense. It's really an astral thought that would be contained within the astral world. Then when you do that, something called, and I'm going to explain this in much more detail tonight, something called the tunnel of light opens up. And the tunnel of light is really the equivalent of a micro black hole. But in a sense, you're already in it when you realize its existence. And so as far as you can tell, this isn't a black hole, it's a hole of light. And what's traveling through it is the very finest, least dense type of energy that exists in the physical universe, where we are. What is that kind of energy? It's called a certain phase-related type of electromagnetic energy. The phase means it just is moving in a certain direction. And different kinds of things can travel at different electromagnetic both frequencies and phases. And minerals that are not alive can travel through what is called the fourth etheric or electromagnetic, it's the same thing, subplane, which is way less dense in energy, than the physical world. And it's where you find things like radio and television waves and that kind of stuff. So that's just, now we're talking about material things that aren't even alive. Now, if you change the phase and raise the frequency, you end up with plants can travel through what is called the super etheric or third etheric subplane into the astral world. Each of these types of things go to a separate part of the astral world to begin with. They can be elevated by beings who live in the astral world, but they naturally go to the Fallen. Those things that are not living and that are part of the mineral kingdom, we'll call it, generally, and also some viruses. There are a few viruses that kind of, and maybe things called prions. They could end up going to the seventh astral subworld. And that's the lowest part except for the part where evil hangs out, as I described last week, which is called the E-sphere. Different thing entirely because they change it themselves. But for right now, we're talking about where things can generally head on to. And then if you go to animals, the highest place that animals can go to is the fifth the sixth subworld, and in the fifth subworld, I'm getting very mixed up here, and because plants go to the sixth, by the way, I confused that. Plants go to the sixth, and some of them only go if they're kind of like fungi, etc., they'll end up possibly in the seventh. But the highest they can make it to is the sixth without some assistance from people or some animals. And then animals end up generally in the fifth, although a few kinds of very low-life animals might only be able to make it to the sixth astral subworld. So, and I'll explain why this is the case in a minute. I'm just giving you what happens, and then I'll explain the whys. All right, so in human beings can go to any of those subworlds and also beyond. They could go into the fourth or the third, and some could actually make it into what is called the second or first astral subworlds. But the reason for this is that human beings leave from the highest part of the etheric subplanes, which is sometimes called the first etheric subplane, and they actually leave from the atomic level of that subplane if they're going to any of the higher subworlds, higher being that generally above at or above the fourth subworld. If they can't get that, if they can't get to the atomic level, which is the very highest, where all of their mind is focused at, then they could still have to leave through the first etheric subworld, but they leave from not the highest part, and they can end up in the sixth, the seventh, the sixth, the fifth subworlds of the astral plane. So depending upon the kind of consciousness we're dealing with, and whether you're alive or not alive, and what kind of life you are, then that all comes together and determines how you get there. Now, the question that to this now is why? Why would it matter? Why can't frogs end up in the highest subworlds without the assistance of higher animals or humans? And the reason is that it's the consciousness of the person or animal, plant, or mineral that determines where they go. Now, minerals, in and of themselves, you can't really describe it as consciousness, but their soul informs them with a certain level or kind of consciousness, telling them in ways how to interact with their electrons on the outer rings of the atoms that they're composed of, and all kinds of strange things that we don't think of as being spiritual, because we think, that's just physical chemistry or. No, it's not. It's not. It really still has behind it a spiritual foundation. But that's the reason. It has to do with what kind of consciousness, as a part of thought, consciousness is part of thought, is behind what is going from here to there. And how does the consciousness affect the whole situation? Well, it affects that thing called the tunnel of light. That little thing that connects the two dimensions, major dimensions of time and space, the astral and the etheric physical, that part is is opened up through consciousness, and which is, comes from a part of thought, and it only functions when the consciousness is in correct phase with the angle that the specific tunnel of light, we'll call it like a micro black hole, is in tune with. It's like a tuning fork. And if you hit the right one, you're able to then traverse. Humans can hit the right one by practicing their thought and aligning their chakras and going through a correct individual chakra or combination of chakras that allows their electromagnetic energy to be tuned to the type of passageway, tunnel of light, that leads to where they want to go to. Now, how come these tunnels of light exist? Well, because of a thing called interpenetration. The astral plane and God's thought is keeping this whole system working because it goes through every plane and subplane and sub-subplane of existence in the entire universe. And if you match to certain parts of it, you can go wherever you want. You're free to go, free to roam about. And if you don't match it, you're blocked from getting to virtually anywhere. And so this is the interesting part. The ability to travel, the ability to move from one place to another, is determined following a decision by God and those that work with and for and under God, so that this system has limitations. In old vernacular, talking about things like the Theosophical Society, it's called a ring pass knot. It just means that there's a blocking to those things that don't have high enough consciousness to going any further. Why is it important to do this? Well, have you ever wondered that if there really are zillions of civilizations out there, and some of them probably are very dark and terrible, how come they haven't come to Earth and wiped us out and taken us over? You know, like a bunch of locusts or something. How come they haven't come over and take us over? I mean, there's lots of horror kind of movies that write about this stuff in science fiction. So then why hasn't it happened? And the answer is kind of the same thing. In order for anything to travel faster than the speed of light, you have to be able to understand how to work through these ring pass knots, which are have to do with electromagnetic and etheric, same thing, energies, to even move into faster-than-speed light conditions in the physical universe, where we are, and its electromagnetic counterpart. You would have to convert yourself into electromagnetic energy, not physical energy, and then go at speeds faster than light and be able to go through one of these ring pass knots. I just heard there's some kind of technical problem, and I'm not sure what it is all about, and I don't even know if I'm on the air. So let's find out. Engineer, are you there? Oh, engineer, if anybody is listening to me.
I am here, and I'm live on air with you. Niles, we're good to go.
Oh, we are good to go. Okay, was there some problem, or was that just on our end?
Yes, there was a problem on the server. We had to restart the web server.
Okay.
Your stream has gone on unabated.
Okay, well, that's good to hear, and I'll just keep going. Now, did everybody just hear that what you just said?
Yes.
Oh, good. Everybody, this is Seth. For all of you who don't know, that's the engineer on the other side, 1,000 miles away from me. Great. Thank you, Seth.
Oh, thank you.
All right, I'll continue to go. All right. Hey, isn't it great? You see, all you have to do is hope and pray that there's somebody out there listening and someone comes on the line. It's great. Okay. Now, I'm just sitting in the room, and I have no way of knowing what's happening. I don't even have a computer in front of me. You might say, well, how come a guy doesn't have a computer? I mean, this thing's partly over the computer, right? Well, I know. But first of all, there'll be feedback problems and other issues, so I've just decided not to do that. Some people do, and they get around the issues. So back to what I was talking about. Now, you may have missed a little bit of what I said. I hope whatever you missed, you'll be able to catch up with. So here we have this situation where, let's say I'm a evil dude, okay, and I'm still in this galaxy, but I'm about 1,000 light years away, and my planet's gone all the way dark, and I'm going to come over to Earth because it's getting kind of dark, and it'd be fun to play out on Earth and fix Earth so it joins in with my evilness. But in order to get here, I've got to convert myself into electromagnetic energy and move through the etheric parts of this time and space so that I can exceed what would be considered to be the speed of light to get here. Now, you can say, well, what about those black holes and those wormholes and all those other things? Can't those people? Well, they're not stable, and they don't really, you can't depend upon them, and most likely you just get crushed into nothingness. Now, you got to do it the way I said. Now, nobody knows this. So I haven't seen any science fiction stuff written about this, but now that I've said it, probably somebody will do it, right? And they won't mention me in the process. Oh, it's okay. I don't mind. But at any rate, yeah, you have to convert yourself into electromagnetic energy and everything around you that you're bringing with you. That's a huge problem. Can you do it? Yeah. But you got to have some enormous consciousness, not just in yourself, but all the people who are traveling with you. And you're going to probably need to have something more than that that I don't want to bring up. So put it all together. Put it all together. Can it be done? It can be. But not by the evil dudes. Because those folks don't have the consciousness to even open up the micro wormhole they'd have to go through. Because that's what it would be, a micro wormhole. But we would call it a tunnel of light. To go through to even do it. So the good news is they're blocked from getting here. And that's good news for us, believe me. Because if they weren't, they would have been here by now. And there wouldn't be any Earth as we know it. I'm convinced of that. Because we're fixed for the picking right now because we're a fairly dark planet. And we're not evil fully, but we got enough on it so other evil would love to kind of join forces. And that just very well could happen in another way entirely. But, again, I don't want to go into that, but there's a way that evil itself has a way of moving across the universe in a few seconds and all kinds of stuff. Let's hope that doesn't happen to us, because if it does, most likely those that are enlightened and still here will destroy the planet as a necessity rather than give it over to the dark side. Although they're working feverishly to try to prevent that from happening, too, they being the dark people. That's another time, another show, but I wanted to show you that by example, it takes very high consciousness to get to the astral world, even the lower parts. It takes some level of consciousness higher than most dark people have, which is good, so that we're not going over there and messing around too much. And it also takes even more to try to take a whole bunch of things with you besides your own electromagnetic body, like a big spaceship, and have it disappear from 1,000 light years away and reappear outside of Earth's orbit or something. That would be an amazing thing. In order to do that, you've got to have some super high conscious beings with very far advanced kinds of both technology and understanding of God. That's the good news, because it protects us. Okay, so the tunnels of light are not just from here to the astral world. They can be... They could be intra-dimensional as well. As a matter of fact, in the astral world, tunnels of light are opened all the time because it's so much easier to do, and people move from one subdimension to another. Now, it's much easier for people to move from the higher subdimensions to the lower. Very, very difficult for the people from the lower to move to the higher without radically improving their consciousness. And then when they do, they can do it. Or someone can sometimes take them to the higher dimensions, but because their consciousness is so low, they usually don't stay conscious long. A few minutes, maybe a half hour, not very long. They'll fall asleep, and then they just disappear and go back through the tunnel to where they were supposed to be in the first place because of their consciousness being too low. But that's how it works. And there isn't much of a way to get around the system because, again, it's designed by God, to make it so that we don't have a chaotic universe. It's to keep chaos and evil from impregnating everywhere, which could happen if it wasn't designed this way. So thank the Lord, literally, for doing this. Now, those people who think otherwise and think that within the physical universe there's these little dimensions, they're confused. And they're confused because they should be able to figure that it couldn't be true because of the physics about gravity and for some other reasons as well. But they don't have a grasp so much of that issue, and they possibly didn't understand some of the stuff I wrote if they are copying some of the things that I wrote. People do that. They'll write down something I've said that is more understandable to them, but not really understand the full deal. And that's danger when you take something from someone else and you don't give credit, because then other people eventually will realize that you don't know what you're talking about, and at the same time, you're doing a disservice to those people you're trying to inform because they're not getting accurate information. Okay, so let's go on and talk about, now that we understand the principles, I hope you understand that. I'm still giving you the short version. I mean, if we really went through the physics of this, we'd be talking about some math numbers, we'd be talking about some Schrodinger equations and some other kinds of wave things, and we're talking about how waves and particles are interacting and changing. A lot of physics is being left out. I mean, I'd be glad to discuss that with a real physicist, quote-unquote, someone who has had the experience and knowledge so I don't have to teach them and give them a better understanding if that's what they want to do. You have my email. You can call me. I'm always available to talk about it. But for the rest of us, rest of everybody talking, listening probably, that's not really important. Although I do want to mention that you do have to understand both elements of wave and particle physics to be able to fully grasp the issues that I'm discussing and to realize that there's a secret involved between wave and particle physics. And it's more than just to quote a certain type of Higgs field type of thing. I know that that's one of the inventions, but it's way more complicated than the narrowing and focusing through a Higgs field causing one to change, etc. Way different from that. That's a nice fantasy, but it's not exactly true. Okay, so let's move on now and talk about the astral world, because that's where we left off last week, and go into some of the interesting elements about the astral world. We barely touched on the fifth subworld, and I thought I would start there and maybe go back over some of the ideas that I presented so that we have some understanding about the physics and how you get there and that kind of stuff. Okay, so you got to have a higher consciousness to get to the fifth subworld than the sixth or the seventh, and you're still going to one center only. But the center changes, and what changes from the sixth subworld, you're going to the solar plexus center, but to get to the fifth subworld, you're going through the Ajna Center. Hey, wow. And the Ajna Center actually does have a higher vibration. It literally has a higher vibration, and it has a higher frequency than the two lower centers that bring us to the lower parts of the astral world. Those are the solar plexus for the sixth subworld and the sexual center for the seventh subworld. Nothing wrong with sex. It's just that center has the lowest vibration. That's all. It spins the slowest, and it doesn't have a higher frequency. And the phase changes on it are more are less fractional and more solid numbers. Also, that's another thing that's kind of specific about the sexual center. The Ajna Center, spinning way faster, it actually has these divonic energies that compose the etheric center in our etheric body that has to match up to the same frequency and phase as the astral Ajna Center. Now, the astral Ajna Center has actually an extra dimension to it. So as you move through your etheric origin center, you get this added dimension becomes layered into, which has to be with the phase. It's called the direction of the energy. The phase has to match the phase of the astral energy, whereas the phase of the etheric center is considerably less complicated. It's less complicated because the energy that moves through it is moving in one direction at one time, whereas in the astral center, it's moving in at least two directions at the same time, towards yourself and away from yourself. Whereas when you're moving through the etheric center alone, it's only moving away from yourself. Very interesting stuff. So what does that mean? Well, it means that towards yourself is moving in a way that is emotional. It has some emotional component to it. Away from yourself is loving. You have to have very loving energy if you're going to be moving through the light to get to the astral world in general. So that means more consciousness than you normally might have. Relatively. It's all relative to your normal state of consciousness. You've got to have more if you're going to try to move to any of these astral subplanes. When you get there, you actually enter through the astral ajna center in the astral body. And while you're in the tunnel of light, you're in between the two centers. You're in between the two centers. The center that you're leaving from, you've directed the energy into the tunnel. That's why the energy is focused out. But it has to be focused out enough so you're not focused on yourself. If you're thinking about yourself, you cannot leave the etheric physical world. Your thoughts have to be away from yourself in order to do that. So if you're thinking about, gee, it's going to be cool when I get over here and all this great stuff, you're not going to get there. So you have to be thinking about something other than about yourself to get there. That doesn't mean you have to be the most loving being on the planet. But it does mean you can't be self-focused at the moment that you get into the tunnel of light. When you get to the other side, you could be continuing to focus away from yourself, but then you have to have a direction of where the energy is going for some service on others. Or if you don't, you're going to have energy going in two directions, which is somewhat on yourself and maybe somewhat away from yourself. That's always a negative because you end up, that whenever you have that, in one of these three lower subworlds, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, and you end up with usually more negative experiences because you're emotional and you attract the thought and behaviors of the local residents who are usually more selfish ones and who are looking to exploit you for whatever purpose they can get away with. So it's not a good thing to be emotional when you go there, although very few people can maintain a state of completely being focused out once they arrive in the astral world. Why is that the case? Well, because the energy that you're immediately surrounded by is filled with the desires of everybody, including all the desires you've ever had that are inside your own astral body, fixed desires called glamours. And they start spinning up. I mean, literally. It's like your astral body becomes alive as soon as you get there because you're focused in consciousness on that form of life. Normally, it's fairly quiescent, except if you get riled up while you're physically alive. There, it's like going full steam over second. It's like a super meth experience, I guess. I mean, that's a weird thing. I've never used meth, but I never have, but I've seen other people have. And it's some kind of like being supercharged with emotionality. So it's a terrible state because you lose control. You lose control over your desires. You lose control over your consciousness. And although you may have made it into the astral world, at the same time, your consciousness may be falling every second you're there by destimulation of desires. You may have gotten there in a pretty good state, at least for the first few seconds. But then you start dropping in consciousness. Others, like sharks to blood, come running towards you, wherever they're from. And they say, oh, somebody we can probably manipulate because they don't even know what they're doing, you know, and they will do it. Yeah. And you have a lot of stored energy in the astral body that they will take advantage of, because their own energy may be dampened because they've used up their astral senses and yours are nice and fresh. And they can actually use your senses to do their bidding for various reasons and purposes. Tell me that isn't spooky. Huh? Now, that can happen much more if you go to the seventh subworld and sixth subworld than when you go to the fifth. And the reason for that is what I mentioned last week about the fifth, barely, towards the end of the show, and that is when people go to the fifth, there's all these rules that people try to collectively enforce so that others aren't attacking you and trying to control you, etc. So getting to the fifth is a lot safer than going to the six or seven subworlds, because at least there's rules in place. But then again, you dare not break those rules, and you may not know them all. Because if you do, they're going to come in, and they're going to control you, collectively, for the common good, though. It's sort of like socialism on steroids, as I suggested last week. And it's really bad. And it oftentimes leads to people rebelling, and then when they rebel only for their own purposes, so they're just as selfish, unfortunately, as the people they're rebelling against. But in any case, it creates a society in which there's a constant struggle against authority, because others want to control. Their desire is to control, be it for their own safety and supposedly for the safety of others, but it's really very self-serving. And the majority tend to dominate and abuse the minority, unless the minority gets away and finds some place to be onto themselves. But then they don't care about anybody else. They just want to do their thing with their own little group. So that doesn't seem to solve the problem for the whole fifth subworld. It just seems to maybe make them feel a little better for a while. This is a place that is still better than the six or seven, but no place where you really want to stay for very long, because unless you're really into totalitarian regimes and wacko people who definitely think their way is the only way to live, there's really no freedom. Freedom is absent from the whole society, even though some people claim they're being free when they run off and do their own thing. As long as they're doing it together, which they almost have to do to get rid of the loneliness, because they're there for a long time, they settle for a lack of freedom because they make up all these conditions to be part of their community. And they enforce it by their collective thought, which is usually stronger than any individual, so there you go. It's not as pleasant as you would want heaven to be, although people believe, who go to the fifth subworld particularly, that they're in heaven. And people who go to the sixth and seventh don't necessarily believe in God very much, so they don't care if they're in heaven, but they sometimes think they're in heaven too. Because they get anything they desire when they first get there. So to them, that's heaven. So I guess everybody that goes to the astral world could, if they wanted to believe so when they first arrive, they're in heaven because they're getting whatever they desire. And that's a true statement. It's just that some of the things they desire are so destructive to their senses and awareness and consciousness and existence that they quickly, over some years of time, lose those senses and abilities, and then become victimized. Not much fun. Okay, so it's the energy itself. What is there about astral energy that is like this? Well, astral energy is emotional energy, or it's loving energy. It's one or the other or both. You want it to be all loving, because then it's focused out and you're okay, and you won't end up in these lower subworlds either. But most people don't. The majority of people, if you counted all the people in the 7th, 6th, and 5th subworlds, it's really the majority of people, although not the plurality, because the largest number of people are actually found at the present time on the 4th subworld, which is good, because that means that humanity is still holding on to the fact that it is more good than not, because in the 4th subworld, you get there by going through three of the chakras at the same time, they have to be relatively balanced, and you've got to really have a much higher consciousness, and you've got to respect the freedom of others, and you've got to respect liberty in general, and desire it for yourself and others. It's got to be in your desires, or you can't make it to the fourth subworld, and that is a good thing, because it keeps out the people who would screw things up. And it's a large place. It's a big place. And it's actually, because there's so many people in it, and their consciousness is usually focused more on the people who are still in physical form, they're actually, it's actually the closest subworld, although it's really hard to describe this, to the physical world. It's closer to us than normal being the average for the astral world. Okay, well, we lost a little bit of time. We started a little bit late. So I think at this point we're going to go ahead and take our break. I know I might take it a few minutes earlier than this. But we'll take our break, and when we come back, I'll tell you a lot more about the fourth subworld. That's going to be the fun part. So stay tuned, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I just talked to our engineer, and I have some information for all you folk out there that are having problems. Now, not everybody lost the program a little while ago, but some of you did, and let me tell you what to do. In the future, do not use the Flash player. It is unreliable. Okay? I'm not sure what I'm saying. I'm just repeating this, okay? Do not use the Flash player. Instead, you've got some options. You can download the playlist file, or you can use the embedded media player. I hope you all know what I'm talking about. At any rate, and I think that's for some people that are listening in certain ways. It's not for everybody. It's just for the people that are having that particular problem. And if you have that particular problem, don't use the Flash player because it's unreliable and you're probably going to end up with every other show or something having a crash. So that's the word from the engineer. I trust him, so So give it a try and see if that works for you. Okay, let's go on, because I'm really excited now to talk about some of these other parts of the astral world, which are much more interesting, by the way. Okay, let's say that you really got your consciousness up, and I mean way up. And to get to the fourth subworld is not an easy thing. When I was first doing experiments in out-of-body travel, this is way back, I'm going to really date myself now. This is way back in the 1970s. Oh, my God. And I had in the beginning of it, I had the use of a sensory isolation tank that another fellow, Frank, had built and designed. And towards the end of its existence, I started to use it secretly and didn't let anyone know about it. And I had some experiences, but I was really afraid to go public, in a sense, because I didn't even know what was happening. But eventually, I figured the whole thing out, or at least I think I did. So that's the reason I wrote books and et cetera. All right, so back then, what did I discover? That to get to these higher realms that I had heard about in the lower dimensions of the astral world, when I would get there, people would say, oh, this is, you know, blank, blank. And I'd say, what? Because they call it a heaven or something. They say, this is the fifth heaven, or this is this heaven, or that. You know, and the different words, and I was confused. I said, well, you know, okay, if you say so. But I didn't really get the whole picture back then. And what I didn't understand until about the second year of my investigations, was, or almost the second year, I'd say for like eight, nine months, was that it was my consciousness which was limiting me in getting to these higher realms that I really wanted to visit, because obviously those seemed like cooler places to be at and a more interesting people to find and have a lot less negative experiences as well. And so that was my goal. But then I realized that in order to raise my consciousness, that's an inward journey of change. You don't just like go to the consciousness store and pick up a pint. You know, there's no such thing. You've got to be able to do this in a prescribed manner that I started reading a lot of books about and practicing. And eventually it leads you to a life of service. You have to start living your life to serve other people. It took me years. I'm not kidding you, years to change even a little bit of that. It's taken me many, many more decades to reach a point where at least I'm not your walking jerk anymore. Maybe I'm an improved jerk, but whatever. You know, I mean, to move into higher consciousness is a huge endeavor. It takes many, many lifetimes, usually, for a soul's incarnate. Us to, with different personalities in each lifetime, to be able to reach a level of, we'll say, even moderately high consciousness, where you could get to the fourth astral subworld while still being physically alive and trying to focus your consciousness into your astral body. Your physical body is a major interference because you're still living a life of usually great selfishness while you're physically alive, and that's going to just screw things up. So you have to be unselfish while you're physically alive if you're going to astral travel to the fourth or higher astral subworld. That's why very few people make it there. If you want to know more about this, I wrote a book called Afterlife Love, and it's a whole story about someone who actually goes through this whole thing kind of in a short order. They do it amazingly fast. But the point is that they're motivated to do that for various reasons. But the thing is that you begin to see the difficulty through the main character's eyes, and it gives you a better sense. So I think it's a great book to read for that purpose. There's many other reasons. It's an adult book because there is sexual content in it, because this particular individual is having issues with his sexuality, and in so doing, is having problems with his consciousness. So it's all interconnected, but you have to read the whole story to get that. In the beginning, if you read the very beginning, you might think it's some type of sex novel or something. It's not. And so nonetheless, it is a very good book to describe all the things I'm talking about. So get a copy of it. It's not much money, and it's a fun read. It takes a few days for most people. It is not like Life's Hidden Meaning, which is years for most people. It's years to read it, I know. Okay, because that's a textbook, and it goes into a lot more of the concepts. All right, so, but the two books can complement each other, too. So, getting to the fourth subworld is a huge task compared to the fifth. And getting to the fifth is a large task compared to the sixth or seventh, but the jump between the fifth and the fourth subworlds is much bigger than you might expect. Because this business of going through three chakras at one time and balancing the energies between them, oh my, and the only way you can do it is to serve with those chakras in the physical world. If you don't use them to serve others, you can't do this astral traveling to this other subworld. You're just stuck. Okay, so what I tell you then is the caveat is to get to the fourth subworld, there's no mechanical methods. You've got to literally be living a life of service at a fairly high level. Even to get to the fifth subworld is no easy trick. And most people, if they astral travel, end up in the seventh and have a terrible experience and never want to go back there, which I can't blame them for, if they get there at all, because it's still hard even to get there. It takes many, many months. And then usually some discipline is required, as I talked about last week. Discipline meaning to try to become a more spiritual person and to do some service in your daily life while you're physically alive. Service, spiritual service for others. A lot of focusing out in order to really make it to the astral world and be able to stay there. Some people can get there for a few seconds and then pop right back into the etheric body or the physical body. Okay. So, let's assume that you've really done your work and you've developed a fairly high level of consciousness. You've done some spiritual group work. Maybe you belong to some group service group who's doing whatever. There's many, many thousands of those types of groups. And so you've done a lot of stuff. You've maybe read. You do some inner meditation, but not for the sake of just meditating, but because you want to be able to be more spiritually disciplined in your daily life and live a life that's closer to God and be more creative of virtue. Well, that's a great person. Now you're talking. If that's the way where you're coming from, then you got a shot at it. It may take you a number of months, I mean like 3 to 6 or more months of probably just popping off into the etheric body before you make it to the astral world. That's not uncommon. If you read Afterlife Love, I realize it's condensed, but that person had a different issue and motive. Most people are not going to have what he had. All right, so you end up in the fourth astral subworld. Where do you find yourself? Well, you find yourself among people who are more conscious, lived a more conscious life while they were physically alive than the average. Then when they get to the astral world, their consciousness automatically raises. How come? That's true of everybody, no matter what subworld you go to. Well, it raises because of the following conditions. Number one, you're no longer contaminated with the very heavy and somewhat dark physical energy. You don't have a physical body. You can't sense physical energy except under an exceptional rule where some of the physical energy becomes part of your astral body and gets raised into the astral body. Then you actually might retain a little bit of physical sense. But nonetheless, basically, for most people, there's no physical body. It's gone. It's dead. Or if you're astral traveling, you've moved your consciousness from being focused in your physical body into your astral body. You're no longer conscious of anything that's going on or around or in the physical body is. Wherever it is, if you're laying on a bed or sitting in a chair, you don't know what's going on to it. You have no idea. You're not there. You're in the astral world. Okay, so that being the case, this is a unique opportunity now because if you've made it to the astral world, you now are going to meet people who have higher consciousness because as soon as they got to the astral world, their lack of physical body allowed them to fully sense astral energy, and fully sensing astral energy is more accurate than fully or attempting to fully sense physical energy because the energy does not create anywhere near the levels of illusion. That means by a natural state of affairs, as soon as we die or astrally travel, we are, by nature, more conscious. Now, that's true more of the people who die than the people who still have a physical body, because there's still a connection, and it still may be affecting them. But generally, because they're focused in consciousness in the astral body, it affects them less. But there's still some disturbance from it. And so you can't completely get rid of the physical body just because you went to the astral world. It's still there, and you're still connected to it in some ways. Okay, but the good news is, in both cases, consciousness goes up. It's just that the people who are dead, they really get a boost. And so when people go into the fourth astral subworld, particularly the relatively new inhabitants, they're quite conscious people. They're kind of angelic. They really believe in freedom and creativity. They believe in love, and the kind of love that is a soul-level love. They believe in giving to other people for the sake of helping those people to become more wise givers to still others. They believe in love, wisdom, and they actually practice it somewhat. Now, the problem is they also have glamours. That's a fixed desire. Their fixed desire is usually to look more loving and to look more conscious than they really are. They're just conscious enough to realize that being conscious is the whole ballgame. They actually have some of it figured out. But the problem is that then they have a desire to look more conscious to others, so they try to play hypocritical games of looking and being more conscious than they actually might be. So then they're not loving wisely when they do that, and their consciousness falls through living under such a glamour or guise of not being who they really are. That's one of the problems of the fourth astral subworld, hypocrisy. And the unfortunate part of it is that most people are contaminated by it. The fourth astral subworld is a weird kind of place, because here you have all this freedom, all this creativity, and people are really creative there. And you have them respecting the freedom and creativity of others. You have them finding that love is the most valuable and interesting and super great thing to be, but it's more important to them to look like they are loving wisely as souls than to actually do so, because to do so is so much more challenging for them, and oftentimes that level of consciousness eludes them. So the pretension of having it becomes oftentimes, more important than actually having it, because many people don't. So when you get there, at first everybody seems so unbelievably caring and loving and focused out, etc. But then when you have deeper, more meaningful conversations, interactions with them, you suddenly realize these folks are faking it somewhat, sometimes. And that can be a real rub, particularly if your consciousness is higher than theirs. Now, if it isn't, you just fit right in. You wouldn't know the difference. But this is the problem with the fourth astral subworld. It's a kind of equivocal of a place. And as much as I would love to say, well, everybody there is just angelic and terrific, not so. They've got a lot of growing to do. But if I was going any place first, I'd rather go there than the fifth, sixth, or seventh subworlds, which usually doesn't happen. And most people, when they first astrally travel, end up in the seventh or sixth subworld, where things are very unpleasant, as I described last week. And it is not representative of the whole astral world, but it can be a very big discouragement for the afterlife. So I want you to know about this, because if you do have one of these astral experiences and you end up in one of these lower subworlds, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to go there when you die. You may go to a higher one, but it does mean that for right now, that's the highest place you can get to, and you shouldn't be so discouraged nor think that God is some kind of turkey who created an afterlife with a bunch of animalistic-type people running around who really only care about themselves and are very selfish. Or maybe you might feel guilty thinking that you ended up there because you're really not in heaven, but you're in hell or some type of purgatory. It's not any of those things, really. It's just the nature of the physics and consciousness coming together and the way God decided to create the universe. A very intelligent way, by the way, and a very, very kind way. Because when we do die, rather than astral travel, the grace of God increases our consciousness. We get a gift. It's sort of like putting in your time here, having your consciousness wrecked by all the illusions of this world, and the tremendous, tremendous density of energy that goes through our senses. And then having the grace of God taking some of that burden away from us so that our consciousness could be a much higher level where we can live a better life overall. Even people in the seventh subworld live better there than they did while they were physically alive. Or some of them might be very nasty people and even criminals, but that's a different story, right? Okay, so at this point, I want to just let you know, I'm gonna give you a break and let you think about everything I just said, and we're going to come back to this subject in a few minutes. I would like you to know that, number one, if anybody wants to visit Mesa Fiesta Borders on Monday, this Monday, December 20th, if you're in the Phoenix area, you can go and talk about Afterlife Love, the novel. And this is going to be the first discussion in a series covering that book. And one of the members of the group that I'm a member of, a spiritual group, her name is Mimi. She's going to be running this there. And you can go at 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. this Monday. Show up. Hey, you can't really lose anything. There's no charge. And you don't have to come back if you don't like it. But if you like it, you can keep going to cover this whole novel. And there's a lot to talk about because the novel can be read on many different levels. Hopefully, by going to this, you can get it from a higher level. And that higher level tells you an awful lot about your life here and where you're going to. And that ain't so bad. So I just want to bring that up because usually at the end of the show, I'm just scurrying around to find time to say or whatever about anything. Now, I also have another major announcement, and that is, guess what? It's here. I actually saw the bottles today. Yes, it's here. It's really here. I'm looking for the... Well, I'll just tell you about it. The Phi Chi Jizik is available. You can actually get some. The real deal. The real stuff. I took some the other night for no particular reason just to see how it worked, and it worked great. I didn't really have a lot of pain, but little bits I had, it worked out. And you can order some tonight. You can order some anytime you want from this point forward. We will send it to you right away. We have lots of bottles. You can get it in two different sizes, and I'll go through that right now. Let me again tell you, the Phi Chi Jizik is an analgesic. That means it's a pain reliever. And it relieves all kinds of pain depending upon how much you take of it, and how often. It's great stuff. If you just have a mild headache, you can take a couple of tablets. The headache will go away, and that's it. Probably no other effect on the headache on it. If you have a migraine, you can take a very large amount, a whole bunch of tablets, and then about 6 hours later take not quite as many, but you'll take a whole bunch more. And the headache will most likely be gone. And during the first time you took it, it'll be much reduced. The second time will probably be virtually gone. You might want to take one more time a dose, serving of this stuff. It's a dietary supplement. And by the third time, almost all migraine headaches are gone. Many people live with migraine headaches for days and days on end. And that will fight you, Jesus. Right. And it's guaranteed. If it doesn't work for you, hey, just let us know, send it back. I don't even know if we want it back. Whatever. Maybe send back the bottle. And just let us know you had it. And we'll refund your money. That's it. That's how it works. And because we really know this stuff is great stuff. There's nothing else like it out there in the herbal world. And anything that's even comparable to it in strength is a major, major drug, like narcotic kinds of serious medicines. And even some of those are not as strong in some cases as Phi Chi Jizik. So this is great, great stuff. And you can get it in two different sizes. You can get a 30-tablet bottle, That's $19.95. I call it $20, but whatever. And plus there's some shipping, and I don't know the whole shipping thing. And then you can get the big bottle, which is 100 tablets. That's $49.95 or $50 plus whatever it costs to ship it. It isn't much for shipping because we're sending it through postal, whatever, boxes or however they send that stuff. So you get it in a few days, and even at Christmas time, you should get it within a few days. And it's just amazing, amazing stuff. I do want to tell you this. Don't leave it in the sun. Don't get it real hot. It likes to stay nice and cool because that's the way all herbs are. It's true, actually, of almost all drugs, too. But herbs are even more sensitive than drugs because they're the real deal. And drugs are kind of boiled down chemistry stuff. And so the other thing that's wonderful about this product is it's made out of 61 herbs that are natural things. They're just natural things. And two nutraceuticals, which are fairly common. They're not unusually to find them in various formulas, sometimes related to pain. The nutraceuticals are just there to balance out very small issues in the formula. But the real issue is in the herbs, and the herbs, 61 of them, are doing the job. How do they do it? They work on the centers in our body. And I'm talking about the etheric body. You know, I'm not talking about the physical so much. Is there a physical chemistry issue, phytochemistry? Yeah, there's some. But I really believe this stuff is much more Eastern-related. It works on the natus system, which is like the etheric part of the nervous system. And it works on the meridians in the natus system and in the 350 of 370-some-odd centers that are in. They're called minor centers in that natus system. And it allows the energy to flow through the centers that usually is blocked and causes pain. And it also redirects energy into centers where there's a lack of energy. So it works in both sides, and we can call it the yin and yang side. And it helps then to restabilize and build up the major centers that every minor center must be connected to. Most minor centers are connected to two major centers in a yin and yang set way, movement of energy back and forth. And the energy that it moves is called qi energy, so consequently we call it phi qi jizik. And we spell qi qi because that is the real or traditional spelling of qi energy in Chinese. So we're trying to represent what the product actually is in its name, phi qi jizik. And if you want to order this stuff, now get your pen and paper out, and I'm going to give you a phone number. You can also order any of the other products that we've been selling. I won't go into all those tonight because I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it is important that you hear about this one product because it's finally available. Okay, you can call area code 602-431-5762, and we're going to be taking orders right from now. Although, wait till the show's over. Call after the show. Because I don't want you to get a hang up and call until you can hear me talk some more. Okay, you get a 30-count bottle for $19.95 plus shipping or a 100-count bottle for $49.95 plus shipping. Again, guaranteed to work or your money back. What do you got to lose? And particularly if you have pain. I mean, most people have something that bothers them. But if you're really living with pain, this is a great thing. And I don't care if it's arthritic or bursitis or whatever you want to call it. I don't care if you got migraines or you got sciatica or, you name it. If it's something that is there and you really want to deal with it, try this stuff. Now, you're going to have to use it for a number of days to fully deal with the pain, but you should immediately feel some improvement. I mean immediately. As soon as you take this stuff, within an hour, you should start feeling something. And within a few hours, you should be saying, hey, this is actually making some difference. You decide how much you take. It tells you on the label what the maximum suggested serving sizes are, but you choose what level of pain you might have and try a certain amount. If it's too much, you can back off. Too little, you can increase it. And it's just that simple. You're in control of the situation. We made it so you could titrate, it's a fancy word, the amount you take to match the amount of pain, which is cool. I mean, it isn't one size fits all. And the tablets go down very easy. we made them a little bit bigger than I wanted to have them, extremely small, but they're so easy, they slide down so easy because we've made them narrow, very narrow and thin. So you either could take one or two or three at a time, because depending upon what you want to, how many you want to take, and it's not a problem taking them for most people. You can break them in half if you really think, well, oh, it was still too big. Well, you can break them in half and then take them that way. So for virtually everybody, this can be used. For somebody who's really disabled or for other reasons, you could actually dissolve these, crush them up and dissolve them in an enema and even use it that way. It's kind of weird, I know. It actually works. And it can work in some people better than even taking it orally if you have digestive problems. It depends what's going on with you. So there's always a way to use this stuff. It's pretty neat. Okay? So you call that number. Now, I just want you to know there's a website. It's not up yet. Unfortunately, we're a little bit slow on our website stuff. We're getting it up next week sometime. And you can write this down, but don't go there now because there's nothing there to go to until maybe Monday or Tuesday or something. And it's www.byjezik.com. www.byjezik.com. So, but for right now, call the 602-431-5762 number if you want to order it right away. And why not? Hey, might as well have it around. Makes a gift, a great gift. I mean, you know, it's an odd gift maybe, but it could make a great gift to somebody who you know has problems. Give them the trial size for, you know, $20 and see if it'll help them. I mean, someone who normally wouldn't order for themselves, I mean, they don't believe in herbs, they've tried some herb products and it didn't work for them, this or that. This would be a great thing to give to somebody you know who, you know, has some kinds of pains, that this could really make it life-changing. It could be life-changing for them. And that's a gift that you really can't, if you think about it, giving a Christmas gift, something that takes a person out of the realm of living a painful life and makes them much more able to function is really a great gift. And it allows them to maybe be a greater service to other people, being out of the pain that they're in. Okay, I think I've done my sales thing here. So let's get back to the astral world, because I really like to tell you more about it. And okay, so the fourth astral subworld is a kind of a mixed bag of goods for me anyway. I really liked some of the people that I met there. I thought there was some real hope for humanity in seeing this amazingly beautiful world. A lot of beauty, although some of it was made by pretentious people, so sometimes it's ostentatious and a little overboard, but it's still there. And a lot of freedom. I like the freedom part. Really cool. The hypocrisy wore on me. And I'll tell you, I spent months and months of time just traveling to the fourth astral subworld to gain experience. I did a lot of kind of physics kind of experiments there and talked to a lot of people. I was at Studs Terkel, if you know who he was during the 30s. Going out and asking people what their experience is like living there. You know, people were kind, and they say, well, you're astral traveling, so I guess you don't know much about this place. I said, yeah, tell me anything you can tell me. So I got to know and learn a lot about it. And I tell you, it was a really great experience for me because it gave me the perspective of the good, the bad, and I guess and maybe a little bit of the ugly. One of the things that I most appreciated. Someone's passing me a note right now. What does that note say? I can't see it from my perspective. Okay. What's this? Okay, well, someone wanted me to give an email address as well. I'll give that later at the end of the show. I don't know. All these things are coming in. I want to keep talking about the astral world. I'm done with my commercial for right now. All right, so here we go. I would talk with these folks for a long period of time. And during that time, long being like sometimes my astral trips lasted more than 2 hours here. Well, see, there's time dilation. I didn't really explain very much about that last week. But the time dilation is fairly strong. There's In the case of the fourth astral subworld, there is literally 15 hours of time for each hour here. So if, as an example, if I'm going for, I was going for a couple hours or longer to the fourth subworld, I was spending 30 hours, more than a day, of time there. And there were some times when I actually stayed for more like 40 to 50 hours there. That's more than 3 hours here. That's not recommended. I don't recommend that you do that. There's all kinds of consequences for staying that long anywhere in the astral world if you're traveling. But nonetheless, I did. And so I would spend hours, literally, of their time, my time, over there, talking to people and gaining some insight. And some people were aware enough, and some people were conscious enough, to explain to me what the problems were, how the solutions were being worked out among the people who lived there. And then once in a blue moon, I mean, it was not that often, I met someone traveling from one of the higher subworlds above the fourth subworld. Now, I tried to get a lot of information out of these folks, but they were there, quote-unquote, to serve the residents more than they were there to give me information. So I wasn't always happy with my encounters because they wanted to talk to me about becoming more conscious, and I kind of had the glamour of wanting to have more knowledge. So sometimes it didn't work out. We had what we might say a crossed communication. Not always. I mean, some of those visits, which some of these, they called them the angels from higher spheres or whatever you want to call them. They're just people that came from the service from other higher dimensions. But sometimes they were very, very helpful. And others, they were trying to direct me to live a life that was more, that was of higher consciousness. But that wasn't necessary. I wanted to be conscious enough to be where I was, but I didn't necessarily want to be conscious to be where they came from. And that's always an issue. So, at any rate, getting back to what I was saying about the folks that I talked to, I gained a pretty good understanding, better than I could while I was on the fifth, sixth, or seventh subworlds in earlier times, really, when I was less conscious myself, partly because I was less conscious and partly because the people there don't understand. They're not conscious enough to explain well enough what their world is really about. They don't know. But the people in the fourth subworld were a lot better at that. And so that's when I started to finally make headway about being able to think and write in spiritual ways and speak, not as well as I am right now, but somewhat, a little bit, to other people about what it was like. And, of course, this is, we're talking now, this is like the mid-80s, right? This is not any, I mean, I don't want you to think, oh, gee, I was talking about the 70s. It took me a long time. I don't want you to think that, you know, oh, yeah, I had this happening instantly. I didn't have it happen instantly. As a matter of fact, I thought I was kind of retarded for how long it took. But at any rate, we have a caller on the line. Hi, caller.
Hi.
Hi, who is this?
This is Julia.
Hi, Julia. How you doing?
Oh, it's been a rough few years, I'll be honest with you.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, there's just been so much loss, and I have to wonder if we don't cause our own loss at some point, simply because we can't get out of a certain circular situation, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. So you're feeling... You're feeling trapped. You're feeling trapped in a situation that you're living in, and it's causing you to be depressed.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I keep losing family members, those that mean so much to me. And
well, Julia,
it's like my family dynamics is down to almost three people.
Now, when you say
that's
you
all
that is left of us. They've gone to the other side.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't know. Did you hear any of last week's show?
No, I'm sorry. I did not.
Well, I'll tell you, you can. I think it's up on the internet now. You can probably listen to that. But for tonight, let me just tell you this. Wherever your family is, I can't tell you exactly, but they're in the next dimension of time and space. They are well, they're well, and they're probably as happy or happier, but missing you as well. And they have more awareness of you than you do of them. So they're not feeling as much a loss as you are, because they still have some ability to understand what's going on with you here. But because of the dimensional issues, and it's difficult for us to sense people in the astral world, much easier for them to sense us here, we are the ones that have the loss. We experience the loss more than they do, although both sides do. I mean, certainly they miss you. So I don't want you to think that they're gone. I don't want you to think that they're in some places terrible. They're not. They're in a place better in experience than they have lived while they were physically alive.
I actually believe that.
Good. I'm glad you do. So tell me how come, then, if you believe that, that it's such a problem for you. Is it because you haven't found anyone to fill the void of those people that have left you?
Oh, that's a possibility, to be honest with you.
Well, my suggestion is to think about that, because although this isn't a show that necessarily concentrates on that, you know, in my earlier time I was a psychotherapist. But I will tell you this. My experience is that people, when they have a very heavy hit from losing someone after years of time, it depends if it's recent, that's a different issue, because then you have to mourn it.
Three children.
Oh, three children. Well, that's very, very difficult.
Yes.
And is it within the last year that you've lost your children, or is it more than that?
No, the last was about 3 years ago, the youngest.
My
the most favorite, of course.
Yeah, well, my suggestion is to focus on, especially if it's a child, to focus on being of service to maybe other children, not your own necessarily, of course.
I teach Sunday school.
Well, do that, and maybe get closer to children in general, as well as other people who have children, adults, and share some of their life with their children. Of course, you can't adopt them because they're other people's children, but you can do that. And then maybe someday you'll have more children yourself. And if not, that's okay, too, because you can still replace some of the loss. And remember, those children are presently in the astral world, and they have new parents. I know that sounds cruel to say that, but they do. They don't go there and live there without someone almost immediately befriending them and helping them. And the people that help them almost always love them tremendously, but they don't try to erase your memory from them. Nobody ever does in the astral world. I mean, that would be a terrible, cruel thing. They don't do that.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So I want you to think of that, and I want you to carry that with you. And I'll tell you what, I can't continue with you much longer in this show, but you can email me or call me, and we can talk some more about your situation. How's that?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You have
a
great
blessed morning. Christmas.
You too, and keep listening. Okay, bye-bye. So let me continue now, and let's talk about children. You know, I haven't had much of a chance to talk about children. Of course, it's covered a great deal in the books I've written, et cetera. But children in the astral world are cherished because they can't have kids there. You can't. You have to be born into the physical world. You cannot be born into the astral or monastic worlds. You have to literally leave this world, die from this world, and go on to the next. Now, if you die from this world as a child, as soon as you arrive in the astral world, there's almost immediately someone to adopt you. And most children, and it's good we're talking about the fourth subworld, most children end up in either the fifth, fourth, or higher subworlds. Almost no children, except ones of very unusual and bad karma, usually from a prior life, end up in the sixth or seventh subworld. There's very few children there. That's good news, by the way. And the ones that are there are usually cared for not just by the people who live there, but also by servers who go there and try to intervene, because the people that live there are not very conscious. But most children, end up in the fifth or fourth subworlds, and I would say the majority actually end up in the fourth and above. And that's because children are more innocent. I mean, yes, they have karma from a prior life, but they're still, when they die from this world and they go on to the next, they go with the grace of God even stronger than the adults who die from this world. We all go with grace. We all have grace unless we're evil. So everybody has a soul, everybody is connected in some way with God. It goes with grace, and therefore is blessed with more consciousness and a better situation than they leave here. And children is especially true of. So to Julia and to anyone else who's lost children, this is a great comforting thought, that your child is more conscious, more cared for than they could ever be in this world if you were to have died. They're being cared for better over on the other side than they would be here if for some reason their parents died. And so this is really, on average, now, I'm not saying every case, but I'm saying on average, this is the way it works. It's a wonderful system, and it's not one to be worried and lamenting about the possibility that your child is not being cared for. Now, the loss, when you lose somebody, the way best to deal with that is to mourn them, and usually that's like months and months of time, maybe a year or more. And during that time, what you're mourning is you're replacing the loss with the joy of what was so good about them to begin with, and what potential they are going to now enjoy and grow into in the next life. It takes months to get to that level, because initially it's just pain. It's just a terrible pain, and you're just overwhelmed. But eventually, and maybe you went through a terrible death. I mean, a sudden death is one thing, has its own consequences, but an illness can be another torturous thing as well, because you have to watch the person suffer. But that suffering ends the second they leave the physical world, even the etheric plane for the few days or weeks they might exist there. There's no suffering anymore. Suffering's gone. Going to the astral world, complete loss, complete, all the suffering is gone. There is a joyous sense. They also feel some loss, but they can sense a bit of the people that are here, where we can't sense them. So they're not as isolated from us as we are from them. Again, it has to do with the physics. And could we gain some sense of them in the astral world? Well, if you can astral travel, you could obviously gain some sense of them there. And if you read Afterlife Love, you'll know that that's possible. You can read about what happened there. But the important thing is that you don't have to sense them necessarily if you really understand the process. And you understand that God created this process so that people don't suffer. It's not meant for suffering that children sometimes die. Children sometimes die because in a prior life they had a lot of karma that just was too much to overcome and live long enough in this life. Sometimes they die as a great gift because it may resolve a great family crisis or some other issues. There's strange reasons that children die. And sometimes children die en masse in terrible situations in terrible countries. And it's to bring attention for the rest of the world to maybe wake up to these atrocities and bad governments and terrible situations that are happening. I mean, nothing touches us more than the death of children, especially our own. Okay, so, yes, in the fourth subworld, you find a lot of children. And they're virtually immediately adopted. Sometimes, on the child's own decisions, they may move from one particular family or parental person to another. They have that right. They have that choice. There's no adoption agencies or anything like that. Now, in the fifth subworld, there actually are in some parts of that world, but not all of it. Some children will go to places where they're completely free to decide. Some will end up in a place where they choose to be, where they actually get adopted, kind of. It's a weird thing. But like I said, they're very rule-oriented, and they have a lot of authority issues in the fifth subworld. It's it's not too different than some parts of our world here. That's unfortunate. And that's one of the things that maybe needs to be changed, but it's going to take some development of all of humanity for it to take place. So it was a joy for me in the fourth subworld to meet people who had children and to talk with children. In the fifth subworld, I had almost no opportunity to do that because the people most of the time won't let you talk to the kids because they think you'll contaminate them with whatever if you're an astral traveler. Any of you who have ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. It's a strange place. So the fourth subworld was a great enlightenment for me in many, many areas. And I can say that it really opened my mind, as I said earlier. It gave me the opportunity to finally grow myself to a considerably higher level of consciousness because I had something to really aim for. The lower subworlds, that wasn't so much of an experience for me. I was at least, it was at least an equal, if not greater, negative to be trying to understand what those places were like. Mostly because the consciousness of the people was too low to be helpful to me most of the time. Sometimes there were some people who were helpful, more times than not, so the other way. Okay, let's move on. If your consciousness is really particularly high, and you're still not living a spiritual life, but you're living spiritual in the sense of spiritually disciplining yourself, and that's your main goal for life. But let's say it's a subcategory, and your main goal in life might be to live in a helpful and somewhat believing in God life, but not living your life as the main goal to create more virtue in the world. You end up, in those kinds of circumstances, going to the third astral subworld. This subworld is really based mostly on garnering a higher level of knowledge, which then leads to some greater levels of understanding in people. Understanding is the same as consciousness, but not enough consciousness to become more loving than knowledgeable. So they want to be conscious. They want to understand, but they don't want to understand things unless they have enough knowledge about whatever it is that they're understanding about. Now, the problem with that is that knowledge it allows us to communicate and interact with our world, and it's a very good thing. But it doesn't allow us to create more of God. It only allows us to create more of things, like technological things, scientific kind of things. So if you want to create more of God, you have to create more consciousness than knowledge in yourself. Whatever the ratio, it always has to be more consciousness than knowledge. And the people in the third subworld will not permit that to happen to themselves. And sometimes they won't permit it to happen to even others. And occasionally some people do it, and then they oftentimes are rabble-rousers and may leave and go to the second subworld. But a lot of people don't. And they get kind of stuck in the third astral subworld, seeking more and more knowledge, and then changing that knowledge into just enough understanding so that they can use the knowledge in the best way possible and thinking that that's how they're going to make their life the best. It's really very self-focused still in some ways. But it is more conscious, they're more conscious than people who live in the fourth subworld because they're over the hypocrisy issue. They don't particularly care how they look. They will admit that they're not the most loving. They admit that they're not the most conscious. But they instead say, well, but I have a lot more knowledge than anybody else has in the fourth subworld. So by being more knowledgeable, I can be somewhat arrogant at times and I can be egotistical, but I know what's right and wrong and this and that and everything else. But, of course, that's all illusion. And they're stuck in form. They still believe more in knowledge for the purpose of gaining form than gaining more of God. So these folks are an interesting bunch, and it's a fascinating world to visit. They have inventions that are hundreds of years ahead of Earth, physical Earth. See, all these higher subworlds actually, in time-wise, have inventions and things that we will see here sometime in the future because they interpenetrate to our level, and those things eventually will manifest here, as I've spoken about in some of the books I've written and papers. From a long, long time ago, I remember writing something way back in the late 80s about that very subject. The point is that that's eventually going to happen. It may not be exactly the same as it is in these other dimensions because the physics have changed, but the concept will be there. And so a lot of inventions that eventually will manifest here under different physics exist within the third subworld. And it's a wondrous place of technology. I mean, it's just amazing. But my visits there were left lacking in my experiences because too often I found the people not willing to allow their consciousness to grow beyond their level of knowledge and to find God as being their main reason for existence, with technology being, okay, you can make things, it's fine, you can have inventions and do wonderful stuff and learn all kinds of interesting new facts about stuff. But, and I had nothing against that, provided that the consciousness of the person continues to grow beyond the knowledge level, and they're doing it for a higher purpose, which is not the case for most people in the third subworld. They're kind of cruel to people who, as they get older, start doing exactly what I just said. The older people actually lose some of their ability to gain more knowledge. Their minds don't work quite as quick. But they really focus their attention more on consciousness development. And in many ways, they're more evolved. But the younger folk, who are much more into knowledge, tend to push and isolate the older folk away from them, and they actually put up barriers preventing the older folk from interacting with them because they think it interferes with their ability to think and use their knowledge appropriately, and the technology they make, the older folk don't even know how to use very easily. Talk about remote controls being difficult or something like that, or programming your television set, or VCR, or DVD, I guess. Their stuff is really complicated to use, and the older people don't necessarily want to or even can use it effectively. So, but they are much more conscious. They're much more loving. And so I liked going to the other side of the fence, so to speak, and visiting with the folks who had lived some longer periods of time, hundreds and hundreds of years, in the more technologically advanced side. And those folks were usually more loving, usually. They were certainly more genuine in what they did and how they loved. Even in quantity, I thought they were more loving, but quality-wise, it was a lot better kind of situation. Some of those older folks would go and live eventually into the next higher subworld, which is a spiritual subworld called the second subworld. And that's the place where everybody who goes there, everybody, has to love in a wise way, somewhat like a soul, as much or more than they love not as a soul and want knowledge or anything else to live for. They really are there to live for God. And that's a great place. To get there is no easy thing because you've got to be really high in consciousness. And you've got to give up the illusions of the five lower subworlds of the astral world that are a form, where God is not the primary emphasis, living a godly life is not the primary emphasis, and love wisdom is not the primary emphasis. It's things. There are different kinds of things in different places for different people, but it's things. Once you get to the second subworld, it's not like that. And people from the fourth subworld go more often to the second subworld than even people from the third. And the reason for that is the older people in the third who want to make it to the second subworld, by the time they realize that, they're so old they don't have enough time left in their life to be able to discipline themselves spiritually and to focus out and create virtue enough to be able to make it. Whereas the people in the fourth, oddly, some of them give up the hypocrisy. They do it young enough, so they focus their lives early enough. So they make it more often than the people in the third, which is a higher consciousness subworld for the average. But there's still the select few in the fourth who make it to the second subworld, which is really fascinating. That they can raise their consciousness like two subworlds and get into the second. Of course, it's also a feminine raid subworld, and the energy is a little easier on them to be able to do that. These energies are ray energies that are focused by the ray number. For those of you who understand that, that's fine. If you don't understand, I'm going to go into it now. We don't have time. But really, it's the physics makes it easier for them. So that's a good thing. And they usually can make it, if they really want to, they start early enough. They can make it into the second subworld. And the second subworld is really a truly a godly place. When you get to the second subworld, if you can make it there, now you're going through different centers, groups of centers. It only has to be three. But sometimes you're really, I mean, to do this, you have to have almost a perfect balance in the centers, very high levels of consciousness, very high levels of thought, and you have to be highly virtuous in your life while you're living in the physical world if you're astral traveling. Remember, this tonight's show is about astral travel, so we're talking about how to do this now. No easy thing. How long did it take me to get there? Years, and only a few times, and then I go to the lower subworlds. It took a long time. And I had an institute with an isolation tank. You know, I had all kinds of things that I could rely upon in the beginning, and then I had lots of time to try to figure out my life and try to make this thing work, and et cetera. So, yeah, you can get there, not easy. Really an amazing accomplishment for someone to get there. Amazing if they're still physically alive. And what do you find when you get there? Well, you find people who are incredibly loving, who are seeking to live a life of virtue and to co-create that with others in so doing. But they oftentimes are more concerned about the loving side than about being creative of brand new ways to co-create more of God. So they're more times looking to follow than to lead, and to go to the tried and true method, so to speak, than to find something new that is really creative and different to be of service to others, and to work with others in a creative and new method. They are followers rather than leaders, generally. This is not a bad world because of that. It's just that you find people sometimes estranged from even the concept of creating more virtue because they're focused on trying to find all the ways that they're supposed to raise their consciousness. It's almost like, gee, if I could just find all the ways that are appropriate, I would be a better person. And that's a mistake. It's a mistake that they usually got by following too closely to certain religious beliefs while they were physically alive, or maybe while they were alive in one of the lower subworlds, they never realized that the true path to God is a path of individual creation and not one of just being part of a group and following someone else. It's hard to understand that, I know. And it's one of the reasons we have conflicts in this world right now, because some people don't get that. They don't realize that the process of becoming a part of God is growing as an individual while you work with groups of other people doing the same thing. They're growing as individuals. This is very complicated and hard to understand. It's called a pair of opposites of that particular kind. And the people in the second subworld, at least half of the residents are lost in that illusion. It's a goofy thing. Some are badly lost in it, some only in a minor way. Depends when they got there. It depends how well they've been trying to work it all out. Yeah, some of them just sit around and pontificate about how they can grow their consciousness. And they actually do some things that they think are doing that. But they aren't being creative. And they aren't growing as individuals either. They may grow together as a group. They may become very close with other people and try to do things together as a group, following some prior something that someone else did, thinking that's the way to do it. Just find a good formula and follow it, you know. But you really have to be creative if you're going to be close to God, because God is a creator. If you're going to co-create with God, and God is a creator, you have to become one. And that's what I tried to eventually explain to some of the residents in the second subworld when I finally made it there and realized what was not going right for some people there. People would take offense. People would think that I was either talking down to them, or how should I know if I'm an astral traveler? They're living here. They obviously should have higher consciousness than me. But the illusions was very strong of religion and of following some kind of creed of what other people have said is the right way to live, to be godly. Not realizing that the right way to live, to be godly, is to be creative of that way, not to be a follower of it. Virtue is created. It isn't recreated. And so that's the problem that these folks have. Not everybody has those problems. Some people, usually people who really have worked out some of the desires that they have, start becoming more and more creative. Those folks are probably destined to live in the first astral subplane at some point in their life. But while they're in the second subworld, they oftentimes travel to the lower subdimensions to become these spiritual angel-type people. They can usually make it down to like the sixth subworld. And when they go and serve, they really do good things. But they also give up some of their life. Why is that? Because if you recall, there's a time dilation issue. If you live in the second subworld, time is dilated 21 times. This is an approximation. 21 times, I'm making it a whole number, greater than it is here, where we are right now. But if you go to the sixth subworld, time is dilated only 9 times. And so what happens is you're losing time. People are living in a lot more time in the second subworld than you're living in the sixth. So when you return, much has happened, and you've lost a lot of relationship there. So each time people go on these jaunts for a week or two sometimes to serve, it's like they're gone for 2 or 3 times that length of time when they return. And there's a loss. There's a sense of loss of continuity with those that are there. That loss actually helps people to gain an understanding of individuality and realizing that they can't keep all their close relationships like their younger brethren may be doing who aren't traveling to the lower depths. But what they lose in those connections with the people they know in the second subworld, they gain in the service they're doing in the sixth or fifth, sometimes the fourth subworlds of the lower dimensions, subdimensions. So this is a good experience for them, even though it's somewhat painful at times, especially in the beginning of the process. But it helps them to eventually gain perspective. And that perspective is that it's a good thing sometimes to make that sacrifice, so that they can be of greater service in places where they're needed. And finally, we get to the first astral subworld. I am not really doing justice to any of these subworlds, but I'm trying to do it within the time allotted. In the first astral subworld, people actually get it. There's nobody there that can stay there for more than a few minutes to an hour or two without falling asleep and going back down. But doesn't understand that they're there to be a co-creator with their creator, that it's an individual growth process while at the same time they're working with other people in groups and they're all functioning as souls and they're doing amazing work. They work in all the lower subworlds and they work through usually not just individuals in those lower subworlds but with groups in those worlds, and sometimes even quote-unquote government types of institutions of what there is of those. They try to help those lower worlds to become more virtuous by bringing in the ideas that I teach in this program and much more. They try to help others to gain a balance in living their life at as high a level they can in the areas that they're living in. They don't try to make everybody super conscious because they can't. But they try to help people within the levels that they can understand to gain some levels of improved creation of virtue. And they do this in a planned, kind of organized way. They're trying to get the subworlds to start joining together in some ways, because eventually what is hoped for is a sacred planet. For Earth to become sacred, the entire astral dimension has to become a single dimension in which all the people can freely move about, and where the level of consciousness is huge compared to what it is now on an average. So we've got a lot of work to be done there, and evil has to be driven off the planet. That sphere of evil I talked about last week, that has to be gotten rid of. And there's a way to do it through the work mostly of the first astral subplane people. They mostly are dealing with the evil folks. They have their ways. I don't have time to explain those ways right tonight, but I do want you to realize that because of these people, they are holding the planet together. They and the people in the mental worlds are holding this place together. And without them, we wouldn't make it. So it's good that they're there. There aren't very many of them. The numbers are relatively small because very few people have the consciousness to be able to maintain that kind of life, living in the ways that we've talked about. Difficult. Tremendous sacrifices. And at the same time, these folks are more what I would consider to be angelic than what traditionally angels are described as. I consider these great beings. Now, they're still human beings. And when they come back in their next life, if they've lived any amount of time in the first subworld, they're going to live an improved next lifetime, for sure. Even the people in the second subworld, that's true of, because those are the two spiritual ones. But people in the first subworld are going to have dramatically amazing lifetimes in their next lifetime. It's something to definitely look forward to and to think, well, wow, that would be a fantastic thing to do. Well, listen, again, I'm going to remind you that there is an email. I guess there's an email place. What is the email place? I don't know what the email thing is. Whatever it is, someone gave me some for email. Well, whatever it is, I'm almost out of time, so I'm not sure what this email situation is about. But I do want you to order some 5-T Jizik if you have any kind of issues with pain or anyone else that has any. Yeah, I already said that email. The email is byjizik.com. But you're going to have to wait maybe for a few days to get to that. I'm not sure if it's available yet. If it is available, try it. Buygizik.com. You can go to that and see if there's anything there to go to. But at any rate, call the phone number, 602-431-5762. If you want to get some Jizik for this Christmas, for yourself or anybody you know, remember, you can get a $20 bottle for someone just to try it. It's a trial size. It's also great for travel size. You can carry it with you. We're out of time for tonight, and I want you to know that this has been a great pleasure talking to you tonight about this subject, and I would love to talk more about it on another show, but not next week. We'll deal with a different subject. But to go into deeper explanations of some of the things I covered. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.